Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley, and our CAM podcast is brought to you by our fine platinum sponsors, Matthews, Trueball Excel, PSE, Black Eagle, Elite, B3 Archery, and Victory Archery. All right, today we have two great guests with us for the price of one. We have the husband and wife shooting team of Dan and Emily McCarthy. Dan and Emily, thanks for being here.
You bet. Good to be here, guys.
So this time of year, we're coming down off the season. Let's start out. What are you folks doing this time of year?
Getting caught up in everything we get behind on.
As much fishing as I can do.
As much fishing as you could do.
Yeah. Trying to make up for all, like, during the season, people don't realize the season's so busy and you don't get to do any, like, I don't get to do much of anything other than, shoot and work. So after the season's over, I like to try to catch some fish, get ready for hunting season.
I like that.
I like to hang out with my family.
Yes, so. Emily, you just took a big trip. We followed along on social media to Montana. That looked like a good time.
Oh, it was. It was awesome. Good times with family and friends.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk to both of you this year because, I mean, this was a banner year for the McCarthys, tournament-wide, but on the ASA circuit in particular, Dan winning 5 of 6 ASAs and Shooter of the Year, Emily winning 3 of 6, and then 2 second-place finishes out of the 6 ASA tournaments. First, I'll just start with a general question. How do you two feel about that, looking back on it?
Incredibly blessed with our season.
Yeah, I'm happy. I don't know how else to respond to that. It's a very, very great season. I don't think people realize how many things have to come together for a season like that to take place. I don't think that we did anything different this year than what we probably have in the last couple of years from a preparation standpoint or a training standpoint or intensity standpoint. Definitely, pushed hard, but a lot of things just fell into place. Just making good shots when you needed to, making good decisions.
Mm-hmm. Nothing different. This wasn't like I just assumed, they must have done something, in the off season or during the season to really be on their A games when they came into these.
Yeah, well, I boiled up a small recipe in a cauldron of Michael Bolton CD, a couple dragon scales, small potions and stuff. But other than that,
you're not going to give us the exact recipe, though. That's trade secret.
Yeah, no, really. It's just that we worked hard. But I wish I could take credit for, feeling like I just really was banging on all cylinders this year or anything. But I really just feel like there's a lot of things that came into place at the right moments for me during my season. I can only speak for myself.
Right.
It was just a great year. Last year, I felt like I shot really well. I think I took 4 seconds and lost most of those events on the last shot. Won a few tournaments, but lost Shooter of the Year by a couple points.
Yeah, it's just
some years you catch the breaks and some years you don't. I felt like this year I just couldn't make mistakes when I easily could have. I just didn't.
I looked back, Dan, you winning 5 of 6 ASAs this year. The ASA historical system was broken, so I couldn't check before 2015. But I saw 1 year where Levi won 4. Are you aware of anybody ever winning 5 out of 6 tournaments in a season?
I won 5 out of 7 one other year. Okay. Back in 2005, I think I took 5 wins and 2 seconds that season as well. Evan Bays won the other 2 tournaments that season. So I don't know. Gotcha. I really don't pay attention to any records and don't really care about them.
Right. And Emily, this is my perception. You can tell me if my perception off, but it seemed like this year when you got into those shoot downs, man, I went through all of them. And I mean, I'll just run through a couple of them here. Texas, which you won, you shot 10, 12, 10, 10, 12, 10. London started off with an 8, but then 12, 12, 10, 10. Metropolis, which we'll talk about that, was insane. That win, 10, 10, 10, 12, 10. Cullman, where you came in second, start off with an 8, but then 10, 10, 10, 12, and then an 8 on the last one, but you were shooting at a 14 anyway. And then actually the classic was the you know, you won that one. That's one where you had 3 8s.
That was a horrible one.
But it seemed like the shoot downs, it seemed like the shoot downs, you were just on fire this year. Did you feel anything different, or what was it going on for you?
I don't know. I feel like last year changed a little bit for me too. I did in Cullman, I came out with 5 on my first one, then 3 12s, and then a 10. I just feel like I've been more aggressive, more trying to make smart decisions, but yet also, but I think my motivation to win is different, like a little bit more, I don't know, just more in it versus the classic. I don't feel like I was making good decisions. I feel like that shoot off was like, I wasn't adjusting. I wasn't being fast. I wasn't mentally 100%. I feel right. Like being how I had been in the rest of the shoot offs. So
did the cold have anything to do with that?
It was cold. No, I don't even know what had to do with that. I felt like the first target, I made my mind up. I was not going to be aggressive. I was going to aim center. And then I get out there on that stake and I was like, I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to aim at this upper. And then I ate it just right off the top. And then it was just like one bad decision after another. So, but I'm normally pretty good for an 8 on my first target because I'm very aggressive.
Is it an aggression thing, or is it in one of the shoot downs, Darren said, oh, that's probably just adjusting from going out into the woods in here to flat, you know, indoor facility, completely different for judging.
I think it's different for judging, but I also feel like I'm very confident with my number when I get in there, where maybe I should play a little bit more safety at times, and I don't. All things to learn of for next season and just try to remember when I'm out there.
And now you said also that you wanted to win it more. I forget how you exactly phrased that. Is that something, a different mentality that you had this season?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it was, I always want to win, but sometimes I feel like, I feel like this, the last couple of years I've been pushing harder to just, 100% focus. I have really bad ADHD, so I have a hard time focusing. And this year, I really feel like in the last couple of years, I've tried to figure out ways to hyper-focus myself for 5 targets in that shoot-off or 20 targets per day out on the course, instead of being like hyperactive Emily that's like paying attention 3 targets down to the conversation and just normal. I have a hard time focusing. And I feel like the last 2 years, I've really made a point to figure out ways to focus more and focus on what my job is for that moment. And what I love about ASA is it's 1 minute. I get 1 minute on that stake to focus. And that's hard for me to focus for 1 minute, but I feel like I've worked really hard at focusing for a minute.
So it seemed like,
I feel like that's the difference.
It seemed like with your shot, I don't know if this is just my perception of it, but it seemed like your shots, a lot of them took longer this year, that you were holding longer. Do you feel that way?
No, I feel like that's something I've been working on for years, is to not hold for a really long time. But
oh.
I'm still working on it. Apparently, I didn't master that this year.
Well, one of the tournaments I was watching, you were, it was Texas, Paris. It was a 12 that you shot where it was a long hold. And actually Darren commented, he was like, man, Emily's holding a long time, but then it broke and boom, right in the 12. I mean, I guess you're just waiting for that hinge to go off. I'm guessing that's what's happening.
I shoot a very aggressive shot, but my hinge is set pretty slow. So I pull, and I just wait for it to fire. So that's why I struggle indoors with the time clock, because I shoot so slow.
Oh, gotcha.
But very slow.
Okay, so what I wanted to ask you about was practice, and we're talking ASA practice here, 3D. Do the two of you practice together, or do you do your own thing, or how does that work for you?
So, yeah, we practice together almost every day. We, you know, try to have a – we try to schedule, you know, a time that we're both – that's going to both work for us, and then we run out there and get warmed up, and then we shoot around against each other, kind of for a little level of competition. And Emily beats me sometimes. Yeah, I mean, she's a great shot. She's a great shooter. I mean, she put thumping on me a few times this year. That was some good shooting, like ridiculously good shooting. I could think of one IBO round that we were practicing for. And I shot really good on it. Yeah. I shot like, I mean, we're talking 30 targets or whatever that we shot that day, I think. And I think I shot 18 or 17 up on it and thought I crushed it. And she shot like 22. and it was a stupid hard course. So, yeah, I mean, we push each other, try to practice with each other. And it's all good. I mean, honestly, like, I practice pretty hard, but I mean, Em pushes me as much as I push her. I mean, there's a lot of days where I'd probably want to work on something else that needs to get done. And she's, you know, let's go. We gotta go practice. And so I'm like, God, I need to get this other stuff done for either your arrows or my arrows or something else.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, we try to motivate each other and push each other best we can. And it just works good. Or it seems pretty easy and works pretty good. I got the best practice partner in the world.
Do you think that, you know, it's a friendly competition, obviously, but it is competition nonetheless. Do you think that is an advantage to over if you were just practicing by yourself?
Personally, I mean, we compete as far as just like against each other, kind of like, hey, I should be a good challenge for you and try to beat me, and the same, you know, for her. So, but it's not like, it's not necessarily like a real competition. It's more like learning to take advantage of the stakes. Like if she's shooting against me and I walk up and shoot an eight, you know, on a very long target, try to shoot a 10 and gain 2 points on me. It's just a way to strategize that little bit of intricacies of a tournament. But more importantly, I think for me personally, we call it, shooting against each other, competing against each other, because I want to approach my practice at the same intensity level that I'm going to be shooting the tournament at.
Right. That's what I was getting at.
You know, like, what I want her to do as well, is when she was talking about not paying attention. Man, you don't talk about frustrating. I'm a whole different level of like intense, even when I'm practicing.
No.
And she's just like having fun, and I'm totally jealous of it at times. But I did see exactly what she's talking about. I do feel like she, you know, kind of flipped the switch a little bit over the last couple of years, and really started to understand just how important, you know, really paying attention to your practice might, you know, help. I'm proud of her because it's hard to do. It's really actually hard to try to plug into your practice and your training and be, you know, as plugged in and focused in your practice as what you are going to try to be in a tournament.
Yeah. Emily, are there things that you do to work on to try and help you focus?
No, not really.
Or it's just thinking about it.
No, just be aware of it more. I mean, everybody knows me as super just social and outgoing and not paying, you know, like I just really feel like I try to just focus on what's at hand. Like used to play music while I shot 3D every round, like Blair music, and not even pay attention to really what I was doing. And now I feel like I don't listen to music like I did. And I just try to just focus with, being aware of what I'm doing.
Now, when you're doing this type of practice, do you share numbers then after the shot, obviously, you know, do you say, hey, what'd you shoot that for? I shot it for this. Or do you wait till the end of the round for that?
Depends on what kind of mood he's in, whether I'm going to ask him.
when I five a target really bad, she's like, geez, what'd you shoot that
for? gotcha.
No, we generally discuss things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We talk a lot about just, I ask a lot of times, just, you know, coming from my standpoint, I try to help with the mental side of strategy things. So like sometimes, you know, I'll ask her how'd you approach that target? What'd you do on that target? Cause it'd be something like, maybe she called upper, but you know, it's a target that I know that she usually overjudges or something like that. And I just kind of ask him what she was thinking.
Right.
And then usually I get an, I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, just like after the classic shoot off, he goes, why did you aim uppers at all those? He said he was just couldn't even believe what I was doing.
Cause she practiced lowers all week. Like all she did was shoot lowers all week long and practice leading up to it. And then I watch her in the shoot off and it's like eight high, upper, eight high, next target, upper, next target, upper. And I was just like, what is she doing? Whatever. And then, so afterwards I asked her, I was like, hey, so did you shoot it like uppers all weekend or where did those come from? Why were you calling uppers in the shoot off? And she's like, no, I didn't really shoot at them much in the tournament either, but
just wanted to try something different in the finals. Why not?
Hey, I've won tournaments the same way. Just things wasn't working in practice or it was working in practice and I lost tournaments.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You never know. It's just go with what feels right at the time. And she's great at, like, I try not to manage her as far as like, I try to help if I can, but I trust that she's the head of her own shooting stuff. When we're there, she works hard at it, and you know, I just try to let her do what she believes is the right decision to do things, and it's worked out great for her.
Well, so Emily, I'm going to ask you about this one because I never got to ask you about it, but I know we have video of it. But Metropolis, where that wind was just insane and you never left the 10 ring, what was happening there that you were able? I even went back and watched, and I watched Cara's bow and Laura's bow, and it was moving all over the place. But then when it came to yours, it just wasn't moving as much. What was happening there during that shoot down while you were shooting? Like, what was going on for you?
Just the first one, I moved quite a bit, so I kind of had an idea how much I was moving, and then I kind of, the second I shot that first arrow, I paid attention to how much drift I had, tried to pay attention to where the arrow shot with the wind, and looked over on like the long bear and saw where Sharon had hit, because I knew I was coming up on that. So just kind of, I tried to pay attention to everything that was going on out there, and we practice a lot, and it's windy here.
Okay.
So I practice a lot in the wind. And I shoot a hinge, so I don't get to really predict exactly when that's going to fire. But
right.
And I pull really, really hard, so I feel like that helps me.
We saw, I think it was Joel Threadgill, if I'm wrong on that. I forgot. I know it was one of the senior pros. He was shooting a hinge, and in the middle of the shoot down, he actually ditched the hinge and reached in and grabbed a thumb button because he was having such issues with it. But you stayed with it. I mean, you stayed with that hinge. And like you said, you don't always know exactly when it's going to go off. You know about, but
yeah,
it's definitely not command.
No, no. I don't know. I just felt confident in it and just tried to make the best decisions I could on each target and aim for tens. I actually was trying to just hit tens.
Okay. Did you have to aim off on some of those longer targets on that one?
I did. And the cat target actually was my worst target. It was the shortest one. And I was really hoping for a 12. I honestly wasn't paying attention to Cara's score. I didn't realize what she had done. And so I was aiming really hard at that 12 on that cat. And I was blowing from front to back. And so I let down on it. And I didn't know how, well, I saw Carr let down to the left of me, so I knew I had time to let down.
Yeah.
Because, so I let down, she let down, I let down, and then I drew back, and I fired. I didn't know, I felt like I aimed forever on it, but I finally was just like, let's just hit a center 10 and be okay with it, even though it was like a, I want to say it was like a 28-yard target. It was the shortest one.
Yeah,
it was short. But that was probably where I blew the most, and then she was still aiming on that one. But, I don't know, I just felt like trying to aim off and play smart. I felt like my numbers were good, which that's always a, that always helps.
Yeah, yeah. When you got to the end of that, I mean, were you like, whoa, that was just crazy? Or were you like, yep, I did what I mean, that's what I thought I was going to do.
I don't know. I was shocked that I moved. I guess before we went out there, I looked at Cara and we talked, and I was just like, man, I hate it comes down to this crazy win, because I was really wanting to hold on to second place. That was like, I've shot in Texas win where I've lost to Kaylee, and Kaylee came up from behind because Kaylee's a FIDA shooter, so she shoots really well in wind normally with her button.
Right.
So I don't know. I really wanted to hold on to my position and just shoot smart, and that's all I focused on was each target as it went by.
Yeah, I think, Dan, I think you had said even on one of those longer targets, you were like aiming up in the neck to try and hit a 10. I think it was a bear.
Yeah, it was a bear. I was aiming way up by like where the neck connects to the front of the target, and I drifted, you know, outright. I mean, that's where I was trying to break my shot.
Right.
But yeah, that was ridiculous win. That was terrible stuff.
That was crazy. So I noticed this year, maybe you've been doing it in the past, I just noticed it this year, that both of you are shooting V-bars instead of just side rod. Is that new this year, or were you doing that last year as well, and I just missed it?
I start out almost every season with them for the past 3 years, and then okay. I eventually go away from them, and this year I just stuck with them.
Yeah, I started personally my year out with our family members clawing at me here. This is Rocket, by the way.
Hey, Rocket.
I started out with a standard setup without V-bars, just a single back bar. And really, I made the switch into a V-bar. I've shot them a lot when I first started out, young adult, semi-pro, my rookie year pro, and then into like a couple years into pro, I shot V-bars. And I've played around with them before. And what I really like about V-bars is they allow me to balance my bow the way I want, but they clear my like hips and stuff for really steep uphill, downhill shots. And when I made the switch personally into V-bars, we were getting ready for Redding. And so I put V-bars on my bow because I was just sick and tired of like just awkwardly bending my body to make these 20 and 30 degree or 18, even 15 degree shots. That back bar was hitting me in the hip as tight as I was running a single bar up against my, off my left side. And I was practicing for that stuff and just felt like, man, I am having to manipulate my form and my body just in a way that's not comfortable for me. And I feel like I need to go back to a V-bar for this event, for this Redding event, and then maybe into some of the IBO tournaments as well, just to get back to where I felt like I could make stronger shots with better form. And that's what I did that for. And then I just stayed with it, because if things work, I'm going to leave it alone.
Yeah. Why do you think we don't see more of that? I mean, Tim Gillingham obviously has these two ginormous 2x4s out there coming back on his, but... why do you think we don't see more V-bars versus that single rod?
I don't know. I don't think it doesn't work any better, really. Like, I don't think that there's like an advantage to shooting a V-bar. I think that if you properly balance your bow, tune your bow and everything to how you're going to set it up, they both work very well. I mean, I've won a lot of tournaments with a single bar. So she shot very well and done the same. It's just how you set it up. And if you're running into an issue where you're going to be shooting extreme downhill angles, a V-bar, I think, then has an advantage. over that one situation, that one hitting your hip.
Right.
The negative to a V-bar is the obvious stuff. You're going to have to run. You're going to have to purchase two bars, for the back. And on top of that, the bottom of your bow, the low center of gravity and the overall weight of your bow is going to get extremely heavy quickly. So you have to be physically able to hold up a very heavy rig if you're going to shoot a V-bar. And I think that's probably the biggest factor to why, a lot of people that try and don't shoot them that well. You got to be physically pretty in good shooting shape in order to handle one. And it might not work. I've shot bows that didn't shoot well heavy. So it wouldn't have been a great candidate for a V-bar.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I
Emily,
I think you'll see a trend. I think those things are cyclical. You'll see them, come back, go away, come back, go away.
Do I see? So now someone should be marketing the McCarthy V-bar. You guys started a trend this year. Hey, yeah, we won eight ASAs between us on the V-bars. I could be your marketing hype man for
you. Sounds like a terrible idea.
What?
No, it worked. It was a good season for us. But like I said, I don't know that I'll shoot a V-bar next year, first event or any events. It's just I noticed that that's what I needed to. I needed to personally be in that in order to shoot those angles, in order to shoot good scores. That's what I needed for that Redding setup. And I shot it really well. I enjoyed the fact that I never had to manipulate my hips and my legs in order to shoot it. And that's why I stayed with it. And until I even told her, if I feel like I'm not, have some bad weekends, I'll go back because I really don't need the V-bar anymore for the IBO and the ASA stuff. I'm not shooting enough angles for that.
Right.
But the bow was shooting great. And I just kept rolling with it until I felt the need to change something. And, I kept winning. So I just didn't change anything.
Emily, you said you start out with a V-bar, but I'm guessing in the past you would have switched or no?
Yeah. So 3 seasons ago, I started out with a V-bar for the first few tournaments. And then last season I shot a V-bar all season. And then this season stuck with it all season.
And now on your rear bars, do you have same amount of weight or different?
Different.
Okay. What's your heavy side?
How much?
Or which side is the heavy side? And how much?
My left side's my heavy side.
Okay. And what's the what's the weight setup?
I don't know. I change the weight so much. I think I got it sitting here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
13
on the left.
13 on the left. Okay, gotcha. Emily, when you're setting that up, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? Is it just to get that pin steady or something with your shot process? What's your goal?
Pin steady, bubble sitting good. I don't know.
Are you supposed to... Are you supposed to pay attention to your bubble, Dan? I didn't know. We talked about that a few times this year.
Job that I do
I was thinking to our shots of the week where Dan was asking me about where my bubble was.
Oh, I get it. I got the reference. I think you do a better job at that than I do. If there was one issue that I wish I could fix it for myself that I'm overly critical with, it's holding my bow level. And I don't know why I struggle with it. If it's an optical thing, but I want to set up with my bubble left of just barely left of center. It's not terrible, but it takes a lot of consciousness for me to correct that all the time. And so, there's one thing I'm always mad about. It's those dang bubbles and scopes. I hate them.
Well, after a season like that, now, obviously, like you said, you take some time, catch up on stuff, relax. When do you start saying the word indoor?
That's a dirty word. I shot 3D yesterday.
Did you really?
Yeah. I thought it'd be fun.
Oh, wow. Was it?
It was until I got to that black cat.
I mean, I would say from my view from the outside, I would consider you two 3D shooters. But obviously, you also shoot indoor, and that's a part of what you do, being pro shooters. When do you start working on that? How much emphasis do you put on it?
The weather kind of dictates that for us. I try to be outside as often as I can up until the winter around here pretty much makes your mind up for you. And at that point, then I'm going to start shooting inside. But I'll shoot outside as often as I can up until I can't. And then pretty much ice fish and do whatever winter activities you can get into in this area up here. I mean, there's just really not a lot to do. So,
An indoor,
I would say probably middle of November, maybe is when we really start shooting really hard for indoor or start moving inside more.
Right.
But I don't put a ton of emphasis on it. I shoot it a lot, but I really train harder for 3D, and it's a different mentality. Both of them are. And I think you kind of have to choose, that season is different too. So it's like, you really got to grind it out in the beginning of the year for that stuff, if that's going to be your main focus. And then, if 3D is going to be your main focus, I feel like that season runs a lot later and through the dog days of summer. And I know, like, it's easy to get burned out for training if you're trying to like do both.
Right. You know? Right. Emily, I'm guessing you're 3D. That's what you like to do.
I love shooting 3D. I love shooting Redding style. I love long distance shooting. So a lot I just shoot in the yard, just shoot outside as much as I hate being indoors. So I'm outside the second sun comes out to dark, even when it's cold.
Even when it's cold.
Yeah, I just layer up.
Do you have a place there, a building there where you practice indoor, or do you have to go somewhere?
Yeah, at home we practice indoors.
You get to practice indoors there. Okay. Yeah. So for the two of you, well, I'll ask each one of you individually. Dan, what's out there for you in archery that you would like to accomplish yet?
Retirement. At some point I'm going to be done shooting. I've had a great career. I love what I do. I love the people more than anything. I really do. And I'm going to miss them the most. I'm going to attack every year and try to win every event I shoot in if I can. And I know that's never going to happen. And I might never win another event. But I'm going to try. But I love the competition. I love competing. And I'm going to try to enjoy every moment from here to then. And I don't look at I don't necessarily have a notch that I have to put in my belt for certain things. I mean, I'd love to win Vegas. I'd love to win that stuff. But realistically, I know what I put in and how hard I work for the 3D side of things. The way I've been preparing for indoor, even though I've made the shoot off a bunch of times in Vegas, I have to change something. I think I have to change something there as far as how I train, because it's just not giving me the results that I want in Vegas. So I'll try. I'm going to try, but I don't know. I mean, I'd like to win every tournament again or for the first time.
Sure. How about you, Emily? Anything on the bucket list archery wise?
I want to win Shooter of the Year. And I'm going to say, I've gotten multiple seconds.
Okay.
I would like to stay focused for 6 tournaments next year.
How long have you been shooting pro, Emily? I don't even know that.
I want to say 2000. 13, London, Kentucky was my first pro shoot off.
First shoot. One. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and I did an IBO in Bedford that year first, and then London, Kentucky was my first ASA.
Okay, so 7-8 years, so you've been in it there. So shooter of the year for ASA, that's what you like.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference? What would you two say is the main difference in the game between ASA and IBO? Obviously, aiming center. Aside from that, or is there something different besides that? Like for folks, we see, you know, how many people come out to the ASA, and I know it's more than about just the competition, but for the two of you, what is the difference between those two in terms of archery?
I mean, you go. I would say the biggest difference for me is I look at ASA more as like a game, like a strategy game.
Okay.
It's obviously there's skill involved in the shooting and the physical part of actually going through it, but it's a strategy thing. I mean, there's a lot of strategy involved in breaking down a round and being patient enough to come out ahead, or, you know, knowing when to cut loose and really be aggressive. And IBO to me is more like just a round. You're just shooting a round. There is no strategy. You aim dead center on every single target. It's more like Reading. It's more like Vegas. It's more like indoor nationals. You just, here's the middle of the target. Shoot there. Go to the next one. Shoot there. It's, to me, it's very, as much as I enjoy that different style sometimes, like I really like the ASA. I really like how it's like, it's more, I feel like it's more chess style of archery than any other game of archery. It's just, there is risk reward, and it's, you don't have to go at every one. Sometimes it's better to be patient. It's better to...
How about you, Emily?
Same, like literally the same. I love the strategy game of ASA. I love that it makes me have to hyper-focus because I'm playing a game out there and I'm trying to think of what do I set my sight on this? Do I aim at this upper? Do I do this? Do I do that? Do I cut a yard? Do I add a yard? Like, it's literally like such a game. And then like, how do I keep my score safe? And where IBO, it's just target to target.
So this year, Emily, I'll ask you, the Open Pro and the Women's Pro basically shot the same ranges through all the tour. I think maybe Foley was the only one where you were on different ranges. But after that, you both divisions shot the same range every time. Was that, so Emily, I'll ask you, were those ranges any different than what you had shot in the past? You know, I think the mentality is, oh, it's got to be much harder. But I don't know that from your perspective out there shooting them. Did they seem harder?
It honestly depends on the year, because some years we've shot the same ranges as them. Some years we've shot one of their ranges. One year we shot actually a 45 course range. Yes, there was some tournaments that seemed, London, Kentucky seemed stretched out. But I can't say it was harder or not harder. Metropolis seemed like one of the easiest courses we've shot.
Right.
I feel like sport-wise, but I'm not 100% sure.
Huh. Okay. I've talked to Don Bailey about setting up the courses, and just hearing his process as he sets up different courses. And he said one of his favorite things to do is to put like 4 or 5 targets in a row at the same distance to see how long people will pick up on that, or if they shoot the second one and say, the third one can't be the same distance. He wouldn't do that. Do you guys ever encounter those scenarios? Can you tell when he does things like that?
I remember Foley when he did it. There was 4 at 47 yards in a row.
Is that right?
Really?
I judge him and shoot him. So if it looks 35 4 times in a row, I'm going to set my sight at 35 4 times in a row.
So that doesn't come into your head then? There's no way he did the same thing. That's not
I don't relevant. Try to I think I'm better at judging distance than I am reading minds. So I'm not gonna go out there and base my strategy on like what I think went through Don's head. I'm just gonna simplify what I'm doing and set my sight for what it looks like and shoot it for that.
Gotcha. Well, I'm not on your level, but that would mess with me. I just know I'd be like, that can't be 36 because the last two were 36.
That you're right on the first two.
What's that? Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? Let's yeah. say you might have missed the first two or hit the first two, but why couldn't the third one be 36?
That's true.
You know what I mean? There's literally nothing saying that it can't be.
Uh-huh.
I mean, unless there's a rule that says it can't be, you know, the same distance three times in a row, I'm going to set my sight for what it looks like.
I can tell you if he did that to me, he would win. That would mess me up. I just know. I'm no doubts about that. Well, let's talk about what are some things that you guys like to do away from archery that you think helps you with your archery. In terms of, you know, whether it's just taking your mind off of it or something you do where you just don't think about archery or something that maybe helps you with your focus in archery. What do you guys like to do?
I enjoy running, biking, hanging out with my family, paddleboarding especially.
Does any of that?
Hang out with my dogs, walk the dogs. We enjoy a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really care what I do. I don't even care if it's other work. Just I need something every once in a while to step away from the stress that comes with it. And it's really hard for me to even convey that level of stress sometimes that culminates and builds throughout the year. It's a lot. So anything I can do to get away, even for an hour or whatever, to take a break, or whether it's walking a dog, or I love fishing. I mean, I've never had a bad day fishing ever. might be the secret to happiness could be fishing. So if you never fished, get out there, give it a shot. If you never bow hunted, give that a shot too. I love all of those things. The things that are like, I'm very competitive. When I have to be, when I'm working, I am very serious, and I have tried to be as intense of a competitor as I can be. I still have a great time, but when I'm not competing for work, I am very not competitive. I don't care what I'm doing. I just enjoy that stuff.
You mentioned the stress that builds through the season. What is it that makes it build? Is it, you know, when you're working towards shooter of the year, or is it just that the season's going on? How is the stress building through the year for you?
I mean, I think it's different for everybody in the scenario you kind of paint for yourself. But for instance, if you're having a good year, you know, if you're having a great season, you don't want you in your income competition for, shooter of the year, you know, you keep driving yourself towards that goal. You keep trying to, you know, put this goal, and you're trying to achieve it just like any other tournament. So you kind of weigh a lot of decisions against that. Like Emily's going to go on vacation or go see family, and I stay back and train instead, keep shooting. Don't go on that vacation because I set that bar for me, and that's the goal that I want to get this year, and I don't want to make one decision stop that from happening. Then you don't know which decision that's going to be. Then there's a flip side to it where you're struggling, you're having a bad season, and you're still working super hard. It's just really hard to go out there and to work, you know, 40, 50 hours a week or 30 hours or 20 hours. It doesn't matter how many hours you're putting towards it if you're not getting anything out of it. If every tournament you show up at, you do something wrong and you have a bad weekend, it really takes the wind out of you and beats you down. And it's really tough to keep, you know, putting that time and sacrificing those things in life to, you know, try to achieve when you're not getting anything out of it in return. And
Emily,
and the, the, you know, the other side to it is I think winning is sometimes like it's dang near an addiction. You know, it's like a high that you chase when you win and you get that endorphin rush of like, hey, I did it. You know, that felt way better than losing. So you're going to try to get that again. And
Emily, do you feel that stress as well?
I do. And I have a hard time because he's extra and he's 100%. And I need family and I need to see my dad and I need to see my mom and I need those people in my life and I need my sister time. And so like right before the Classic, I took a family trip and my mom went to Montana. My dad, we had all my cousins. We got together and it was a hard decision for me to be like, am I making a good decision going or should I not go? Like I tossed it and didn't know, like, am I throwing away the Classic if I go? And I promised myself I'd practice every day. And I honestly came home, flew home, and I had 4 days to train. And my first day back, I shot one of the best rounds I shot.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, I practiced really hard while I was there, but I just worked on shot. And
you were the only woman who did not shoot down for that weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I don't even remember what happened there.
Yeah, that, I think you shot exactly 400, but everybody else was down for the weekend there. I mean, so what I'm wondering at is that if you just have different ways where you get to the same result.
I think I need different
things than he definitely needs. Like, I need that. Like, that stuff pushes me. That stuff motivates me. And I'm glad that he trusts me that I'm going to work hard and still be able to go home and see family. Cause I went home a bunch this year during my season, back to Montana to see my dad and grandparents and everything. Like, this was one of the most between last year and this season, I went back a lot and I feel like I juggled it very well.
Yep. And we live close to my parents, so we can visit them whenever. So it's important, you know, that she needs to take time to fly out and see family. Family's super important to me as well. And I guess the main thing I guess I want to convey is that there's, you know, the way I do things is the way I found to work well for me,
right?
My personality and how I manage stress and where that stress comes from. And I think I've learned a lot about myself and how I process stuff. And I know that, like, sometimes working, you know, or training harder and harder and harder, it doesn't guarantee me success.
Right.
But I've made some really long drives home from tournaments where I got second and lost by a point.
And ouch.
I was pissed. Like, not pissed that I lost.
Right.
You know, that somebody else won. But angry that, like, if I knew there was anything else I could have done that might have made the difference of that point. Because it's like, man, you just don't know how many opportunities you're ever going to be that close to win an event. And, you know, to trade that for this activity or that activity, I don't know that I would do that again. So over time, I've just developed my own tolerance as far as what I think it takes to win. And it's different every year. If my shot's shooting, if I'm shooting really good and everything's just clicking and easy, then I'm going to get to do a few more things. I'm going to get to, you know, get out there and enjoy more stuff. And if things aren't working, then I'm going to buckle down and get the work done until it is. And I work completely wired, just different. I think she needs the same breaks I need. But I don't think that, you know, she needs the intensity level that I put in there. Cause I think it just stresses her out even more.
Yeah. I mean, last year I skipped my family trip and stayed home and trained for the Classic, and I shot all day long, every single day. And I literally went from shooting really well to, like, struggling. Like, I didn't even want to get on the plane. I was switching bows the minute, like, Dan's just like, put a bow in the case, we have to go. And that's, like, that's because I literally shot for 3 weeks straight. I overtrained, I stressed myself out. And then, so this year when that opportunity came home to go to see all my family, I was like, well, last year it didn't work. I mean, I ended up second last year at the Classic, but it was still like, I don't know. I feel like I pushed myself so hard. I stressed myself out. For this year, I was like, I'm going to try it different. And I was blessed it worked because it was a gamble.
I like that because I've talked to other archers about this before. You know, somebody like a Rio Wild has to shoot some insane number of arrows every single day, he said, to do it the way he does it. And then there are other archers who are like, nah, if I did that, I'd burn myself out. So it's always interesting to me to hear the difference.
I think that's very true. I think everybody has their tolerance as far as, you know, how much work are they willing to put in? And you hit that tipping point of when you're overproduced, when you're overworking more than what you're willing to and enjoying training, then you start telling yourself, like, I need to see something out of this output, you know? And
right.
And if you don't, then it's very hard to do that again. And so it's just everybody, like, if there's any advice I could give out of that, it's, you know, how hard I work at this is for me. And it's different every year. And how hard somebody else works at it, you really need to find that balance between, like, what's too much, what's not enough. And you know when you're not putting in enough. But if you're putting in enough and you're just, you know, killing yourself through exhaustion, that's not good either. And if you're, you know, not having any escape to kind of release that stress and to reset your brain and, like, get out there and enjoy, you know, some stuff. And honestly, sometimes the breaks are great because you go from shooting really well to coming to taking a break. And then you come back and you realize, like, hey, I'm not shooting nearly as well as I was before I took that break. And so you really kick it in a whole nother gear trying to get back to where you were. So just the little, you know, negatives can sometimes be a very good, you know, motivator.
Last thing I wanted to talk to you about was, what's it like in both of your family settings when you guys are in the shoot down, when they're watching at home? I'm sure you're not there, obviously, but I'm sure they've told you about it. Dan, I know your mom is always watching every one of those shoot downs, man. She's right there. But have they ever described to you what it's like for them? If it's like a nail biter, or if they're kind of, you know, more relaxed?
Yeah. I think they're way more nervous than I am, to be honest. I mean, I've lost so many of those tournaments, those shoot offs that I've been in, that I'm more relaxed now because it's just like, whatever. Like, I've been ready for this and I've won them. I thought they were over and I've won them. I've lost them when I thought I had it wrapped up. So I try to just enjoy the fact that, like, I made it this far and it's like, this is a pretty awesome experience. Just, you know, enjoy it. If you win it, great. If you lose it, like, it's still pretty awesome for the guy that won it. And I love seeing, you know, even watching Levi win tournaments. I know he's won a bazillion of them, but I get joy out of seeing that because you just know that feeling. And when you've experienced that feeling, it's hard to not be happy for somebody, you know, when they wrapped up a full weekend of good shooting. But yeah, coming home, I'm always humbled to hear the stories about, like, how many people were watching and my parents and how many people come over to watch there.
Before we go to Emily with that question and to put it on a downer a little bit, just because you mentioned how you like seeing other people win, how hard was it to watch Andy Callaway in Metropolis? I mean, you ended up winning, and that's what you're there to do, but boy, he was that close to his first.
That's tough. I mean, you could see it in the emotion in me, and you know, I just don't have that, like, ability to, like, shut off my emotions. So I mean, I'm good friends with Andy, and at some point he's going to win his first event. And I mean, it's my job to try to win every single tournament I can. Right. So I'm going to try to do that. That win was unbelievable. And I think, you know, maybe the fact that I've been in a ton of shoot offs. I've done this for a long time, and I really entered that shoot off in second place knowing, like, hey, there's a good chance you're going to finish fifth, period. Like, this win, go out there and shoot the best you can, but the harder you try to control it, the more you freak out about how bad it's blowing you off the target, the more nervous it's going to make you. You're not going to be able to control it any better if you try harder. So, you know, the best opportunity I had for success was to just understand that a loss is a very high probability in this situation, no matter what place I came in starting this. So just enjoy it. Just get out there, shoot through it, try to do your best. And I think just having that mentality probably put me in a position that gave me an advantage to be able to hit a couple rings in that shoot off and win that tournament. But so much of that was just pure crazy luck.
Right.
Every 10 I hit could have been a 5. That wind was awful. I definitely came off the target more than once with my pin. I mean,
yeah. Just, yeah. All right, Emily, how about
you? Really, it was awesome. Really lucky.
Emily, what's your household like when you're in the shoot down? Do they all get together? I don't know how close they all are to each other.
No, my family's all super spread out, but okay. Dan's family, I got to touch on. He has like his mom has his grandma over, his aunts and uncles, and they all are there. And his mom always sends videos of it, and it's pretty awesome. Because they'll be in the shoot off, and I'll be getting messages from them. My sister lives in Jersey. She's watching, and she's blowing my phone up, I think, while I'm in the shoot off, going, "Come on!" Like, and when I get done, I see all these like emojis and all this stuff. My aunts and uncles, all my cousins, they all live everywhere, but they all love watching. And my grandparents, my grandpa sets up a video camera and he films it in his living room. And
nice.
My grandpa are awesome. So having that live is unbelievable for my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you guys for
that. Thank you.
Oh, you bet. So you have people sending you messages while you're shooting?
Yeah, I leave my phone in my stool or sitting there. And then when I get done, because we're both in a shoot-off, so I don't generally ever look at my phone. But when I get done, I'm like, whoosh. Like, my little sister straight up blows it up. Like, she'll send me pictures of me on her TV going, "What are you doing?" or something. So
that's great.
It's pretty cool. I love the fact that you guys have done that. So my family talks about it nonstop. My dad's, that link you guys send out beforehand, like the picture I can send to everyone, my dad sends it to all of his friends, his work buddies, and so it's pretty awesome.
I asked this of some other people because I don't know the answer, but did you see any kind of increased exposure because of the Sportsman's Channel? Like anybody that came to you that you never knew of watching a shoot down before that just watched it because it was on the Sportsman's Channel? Either of you?
Can't. I don't know.
It's okay really if you didn't. I didn't know. I don't know the answer.
I'm sure it probably had. I think it was a good thing. I really do. I mean, I can tell you a few people that I talked to that did watch it on Sportsman Channel, but it's not like a conversation piece where I'm just, you know, every person I meet, I'm like, "So did you check out
No, I asked because Levi had said, obviously he's on the Sportsman Channel with his hunting show, and he said,
yeah.
There were people who contacted him that he knows never watched before, but only watched it because it was on there, you know, in the hunting
industry. I think there was a good, great exposure for it. I, you know, would love to see it continue on there. I think your guys' coverage was awesome. And I definitely feel like this year I did have more people talking about it. And it's a relief for us too, because this is such an abstract job, really, that, you know, when people ask you, "What do you do?" You're like, "Oh, dang, gotta answer that question. I shoot archery professionally." And they're like,
"What?
Oh, cool. You know, that's a thing.
Is that a thing?
Like a bow and arrows or..." If you know, and it's like, yeah, so it's just this really weird dialogue of trying to explain what you do and how you compete in events. And there's, you know, there's always interest there, but to have this, I think it exposed even a lot of people that knew that I did this for, you know, for a living for a long time. It gave them an opportunity to actually see it. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just being exposed to it through, you know, hearsay or whatever is one thing, but being able to actually watch it unfold and see this stuff live is pretty neat, I think, for a lot of people to have known about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Well, all right, guys. And we went a little bit past. I know Emily has to get on the road there. Was there anything that you guys wanted to talk about that we did not talk about?
No, I mean, just, I guess I personally want to thank everybody out there from your guys' crew. Just on the, how great of a job I thought you guys did this year. How professional the coverage was, how hard I know you guys ran into some hurdles and some roadblocks. Mike's crew and the ASA, I think they did a great job. And everything, the IBO, all of it. I thought they did a great job this year running good tournaments. It was a great season. All the people at home, are the fans and support system, they just constantly told us good job. Yeah. And congratulated us, and it just meant a lot to us, and it meant a lot to us watching how hard you guys were working to do your job and to cover our stuff. And PGA, I enjoyed doing the segment with you. I had higher expectations of my coaching ability, and you really grounded me.
You may have put too much faith in your student there.
I think I put too much state. Put much faith in my coaching ability.
You might have more patience with me now.
You kept me grounded. And I just really appreciate all the support from our family, sponsors, everybody. Y'all, the whole community is just amazing. And I'm very thankful to be a part of it, even a small part of it.
Cool. Emily, any final words? I'm going to do our closing, but. Whatever.
Just the same. I'm super thankful for everything, everyone. The comments that I read on my posts and stuff just amaze me. I read through them a lot. They make me cry. I'm pretty emotional. Just I'm thankful for you guys. Thankful for everything you've done, and the ASA. I mean, all the range officials are phenomenal. It's just been a great year. Thankful for all my sponsors that help us get to do this. Thankful for this guy here.
Well, it's cool to see that side, you know, because people know that I just spilled my drink there. People know that Emily is an emotional person, which is, you know, people like to see that. Just that, you know, this means that much to you, that it's not just like, another thing. Yeah, whatever. I just won a tournament. You know, good for me.
Every comment, even just a little, just a congratulations. Like, I read every one of them, and I cried a lot through a bunch of them. So I don't know what to say back to most of them because they leave me speechless. So, just thankful for everybody, for all the support.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough sometimes, and I think that's is just good pick me up. Sometimes even the awful stuff is good pick-me-up. And I've used that stuff for motivation more than anything. And, you know, I don't know what I did to create enemies sometimes, but it sure feels like they're out there. No matter what you do, you can't make everybody happy or whatever. But the people that are always there and commenting and just in support, very humbling and just really amazing that, you know, people will go out of their way for us just to tell us they did a good job or to wish us luck. It's, you know, even the smallest comment or whatever, just pretty neat.
Yeah. All right. That is another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. Dan and Emily McCarthy, we certainly congratulate you on your successes this season, and we appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, BJ. Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. The Competition Archery Media Podcast is available wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for joining us.